On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with our friend Brenda Yoder about launching your kids without losing your mind. Joel.
Andrew.
I don't like losing my mind anytime, nope. But especially when launching my kids, because I did one last year and I'm about to do it again. So
you have back-to-back launchings.
I do.
Well planned.
So I can lose my mind twice.
In a row. Rapid succession of mind loss.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, hey, everybody, welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride. We're excited about our conversation that we're going to have this evening. And as always, Andy, I just feel like I'm reminded routinely of all the cool people that we get to meet and talk to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we make no bones about it. This show was, first reason was, as we always say, it was an excuse for Andy and I to hang out as two friends every once in a while. And two, really, I like to talk to people. You like to talk to people. And there is no better way than to suck people into a conversation than to say,
come sit down at the table.
Come sit down at the table with us and have a conversation. So that's what we're going to do. Andy, tell me, let's bring me up to speed real quick. What is going on in the Lehman household right now?
I just got back from a trip.
You did?
And so I was gone for 3 days this last week.
Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's always rough when I'm away.
Disturbance
or, of
the force.
Or Julie's or away. Julie, or, you know, like, and yeah. We did that back to back. She was gone for spring break with Eli.
Mm-hmm.
She came home for a few days and then I left to go to Pennsylvania for a few days.
Yep. So. Jackie just got back from a 4-day trip. She was out in Portland and God bless her. Wanted to, and this is so applicable, I think, to what we'll be talking about tonight, but the season of life we're in. Jackie's out on business in Portland. She's trying to get back for, we've got some kids events. So she's trying to get back on a, for this past Thursday. So she takes a red eye out of Portland, like 11:30 PM, gets into O'Hare and then has to drive and then drive the rest of the way. She gets home. My poor wife, I saw her get out of the, I was heading out and she was heading in and I saw her, stumble out of the vehicle and go directly inside. And then she was unconscious for the next several hours.
I bet.
So, that's just, you know, the weird season we're in. And, but it is good to have everybody at home. It feels like between travel, you know, things Julie's going to,
sure.
You're going to, Jackie's going to, I'm going to, and then all of the events and all of those things just to have. It feels like a miracle when we have everybody in the same house all at one time.
Yes, that's
I hear you. A lot of come and go. Well, hey, everybody, as always, we are supported by so many of you. Your thoughts, your prayers, your well wishes, your attaboys, your shouting across the street at us while we're grocery shopping, cheering us on. At least I hope that's what you're doing when you're shouting at me. But another way we're supported is by our corporate sponsor. So we want to say thanks to our supporters at Everence Financial. Support comes from Everence Federal Credit Union, helping you meet your everyday banking needs with member-focused savings and loan options. Learn more at everence.com/banking. Credit Union products are federally insured by NCUA. Thank you, Everence.
Thank you, Everence.
For our jobs as well, as we always say.
Yeah.
Okay. Andy, tonight, Brenda Yoder on the show. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, we're glad to have you. And I feel like here's the other piece, Andy. When we have guests that are like legit professionals, we have people on the show that would be like, they would say, I am not a professional. They would not allow us
but
to talk about any sort of level of professionalism. Here, though, we have a professional with us tonight who also, we'll see if she wants to skirt off the professional status stuff, because she's also a mom, is like involved in her community, does all these cool sort of things, has been in a lot of different places. We'll have her share about all that. But I think is going to have a conversation with us just about this down to earth thing that we're trying to do of raising our kids so that they can go out into the world as disciples of Jesus, number one, and then, mm-hmm. and then go and not be a burden on society or end up living under a bridge. The bar is not always, doesn't have to be super high. We'll start there. So, One part of the reasons that we wanted to have Brenda on. So a few years back, Brenda wrote this fantastic book, and I've been aware of this book. And again, you have an author on your podcast, Andy, and you will get a book. I'm just saying it is a strategy to further your library. Brenda wrote this fantastic book, Fledge, Launching Your Kids Without Losing Your Mind. And Brenda is here with us. It doesn't seem like she's lost her mind much, but this book came from really a place for you, Brenda. And that's where I want to kind of start our conversation. The motivation behind this book just came from a place of you raising a family, mm-hmm. and doing all the things that we're all trying to do. So I guess before we launch into that, we always like to just share the dad stats.
So tell us your dad stats. No,
or really. Or the mom stats. Mom stats, the mom case. Stats will be tonight. Just tell us about your family. What you have done, what you are doing, give us kind of the biographical info.
Sure. Thanks so much. So I have been a teacher, high school teacher. I was a stay-at-home mom, high school teacher. I'm a licensed mental health counselor, and I'm also a licensed school counselor. I've worked in public schools. I've run a private practice, and I've been writing, for about 10 years. My mom stats, I have four kids. And they were all about 3 years apart in school.
She spread that out.
Yeah. But which meant that when you had a high schooler, you ought to have a middle schooler, upper elementary, uh-huh. and then a preschooler.
Oh, goodness.
And gracious. So we always had our kids at different stages, really all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we had one in college, mm-hmm. one in high school, one in junior high, and then you've got the elementary kid. So they have all thankfully launched well. We just married our last two kids got married this past year. Just actually 2 months ago, our last one got married. We do have five grandkids now, 5, 4, 3, and 2 that are one. We've launched a missionary into our oldest one was a missionary. So let go big or go home, have her go to a college 13 hours away and then have her go to the mission field.
Yes.
We have done all the things, and I wrote Fledge, actually after my first two were launched. My first one's on the mission field. My next one was in college, and it was right before my third one was entering a senior year. And I was a mess. I was crying all the time. I couldn't even enjoy his senior year because I realized that all this stuff was ending and there were no resources out there. Yeah. Everything was about the empty nest. Nothing about your family that's emptying while you're still raising kids. Mm. And so when Herald Press actually contacted me about writing a parenting book, I pitched the idea because there really needs to be something to help parents through this transitional stage from a full house to an empty nest.
Yeah.
Because it is a very vulnerable time of your life. And I often equate it as like being at the junior high dance, you know, where like you're there, but you feel so awkward and self-conscious and unsure of yourself. And I think that's part of midlife, whether you're the mom or the dad. Yeah. It's you kind of know what you're doing until all of a sudden you realize you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I think for us, so we've talked pre-show a little bit, but our oldest graduated last year, second oldest graduating this year. Then we have a year off. Then my first daughter is going to graduate. And then it's a while. Like, well, our house will change drastically because Hattie will be the only one home for several years. So again, kind of like that talking where we're like adjusting and trying to figure out, okay, what does family life look like now? Because not all of them are going to be doing necessarily the college thing either. And so there's some of them that are still in around, like my oldest went away for a little bit. Now is back again. And so he's doing stuff here, getting a job here, has a job. But like it's an adjustment for us because it looks completely different than it did a year ago. Mm-hmm. Just try to adjust. Yeah.
Andy, I've been thinking about, so when your third goes, graduates, my first will be graduating. So that's when Andy and I were like our emotional roller coaster will intersect. But I, you know, Brenda, I think about those years that you kind of like you're depicting, you kind of find yourself in. And it feels like time is just running away from you so quickly. I feel that right now, my eldest being a sophomore in high school. Mm-hmm. And it's like, man, 2 years is not far away. Mm-hmm. And we will be doing the college visit thing here this coming year and all of that. And I think that's an experience that's common to most parents. Mm-hmm. When you have that feeling of like, I'm running out of time. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. What's your counsel to people that are having that experience? Because I think the natural reaction is just fear and panic and all of that. But I think we've all had that, like, man, the time is ticking down. Mm-hmm. What do I do? How do I approach that feeling first and foremost, and just try to get my feet underneath of me to make then maybe some other decisions about how I want to move forward?
Yeah, I think because I had that same experience too when my oldest was a sophomore, and actually I was a very stressed out mom at that time, and that whole experience made me realize I only have 2 more years with my whole family at home, and I think that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Are there any changes that need to happen here? Like, if we only have 2 more years together as a family, what do I want those 2 years to look like?
Yeah.
Because if you guys are like me, you're just going along, you know, 150%.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it's like this, like you put the brakes on. Mm. So I would really just think about pausing and just thinking about some intentionality, whether it's, you know, have you put off the family trips you thought you were going to do? Are you wanting to build some new rhythms in your family that could perhaps actually transcend once they're out of the home too? Are there things that you're realizing I do need to start giving my kids more independence? Like if you've got them on 360 all the time and they're, you know, they've never been off 360 and they're entering their senior year, is there something that needs to start changing so that they learn a little bit more independence and you're learning a little bit more dependence from you? I mean, that's just one thought of many, but just kind of thinking, is there anything here I need to shift?
Yeah.
Because this is really all the time we have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of your book, you write this line, and I think again, people will connect with this. You share about a period of time where you said where the climate in your home was filled with turmoil, like the charge in the air before lightning strikes. Where it just feels like we're yelling more than we're talking, where things are kind of on edge. Everything is tense. You talk about this being just a very real reality for you and your family. What do you feel like led to that experience? And then how did you journey out of it? Like once you're like, oh, we've got Houston, we have a problem here. What was the next step?
Yeah, I think what got us there was I was reactionary. I was a reactionary parent often, not all the time, but often. And I kept on thinking that, oh, you know, we're going to grow out of this stage. And then all of a sudden, like I said, these breaks just stopped. And I realized we only have 2 years at home and I've got to get a hold of the stress level, because I was teaching full time. I was teaching high schoolers. So I was teaching 180 kids a day.
And that's stressful. Stressful,
right. That'll do it. You know, and I was asking for another teacher. They weren't giving me. My husband was a teacher. He was milking cows. We had high schoolers down to preschooler. And I realized that if something didn't change, and I was assuming, you know, my teen just needed to straighten up.
Yeah.
When really I realized, oh, only I can only change what I can change. Mm. And I had to look around and think, we only have 2 more years. And if I continue this, the only years my whole family, that the kids will remember is just mom, you know, mom was just irritable all the time. And I made a hard decision, which was my job was the stressor. Mm. I didn't have emotional energy left for my own kids after dealing with high schoolers all day long. And I poured my heart and soul into my classroom, sure, like a lot of people do. Sure. So I originally was going to take a sabbatical, but I ended up just leaving the classroom and going back to grad school full time for 3 years.
As one does.
But, you know, I'll tell you, the first time I was in my house by myself without kids, it was the most life-giving moment because, you know, we worked with kids. We took the kids to school. I mean, there was never a minute in my day where I wasn't around kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so just that space to breathe. And I think for everyone that looks differently, but I really want to encourage anyone that if you find yourself in a moment where it feels like your train is just going so fast and you can't pull the brakes, no, you can. look at what you can control. And even if it's only for a season, do something that you may need to change for a season, because the years you have all your kids at home, they are limited. Mm-hmm. And I will never go back and regret that decision.
That's good.
Yeah. That it feels, I know, and I've been guilty of this. You mentioned it when things feel like they're getting a little bit out of control. There can be this, I think, temptation to not look internally and to say, like you said, I just need to better arrange my child's life. I need to get their behavior under control, mm-hmm. there, you know, and do all this. And, you know, I will say, if I had just one kid, I might be dumb enough to try that. But like, all of my kids are all in different place. Like, they're mm-hmm. in different emotional stages, different levels of maturity. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the younger ones feel more mature and more stable than the older ones do. No offense, boys. You know what I'm talking about. You know, it varies so much. And I think to myself, it does come back to, what are the things that I personally can make a change within my, mm-hmm. within my parenting and with my approach. Andy and I have talked about this many, many times on the show. We are just trying to raise young people that we want to hang out with when they get older. Mm-hmm. Like, that's because we will spend the majority of our life with our children as adults.
Right.
You're experiencing that full force right now, which is a really sweet season. You get grandkids out of it too, which is wonderful. but really, I'm not just raising kids, mm-hmm. right? I'm raising adults that they're going to be.
You're raising somebody else's spouse.
Golly, yes.
All of that.
Yes. And I think that's a big one, especially for me as a mom of boys. Mm-hmm. So I had three boys, and that was something that was a light bulb moment for me, was when, you know, my daughter was my first. So, of course, I raised her kind of to be, I don't know, kind of independent.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, you know, like, she did her own laundry early on and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden, when my boys were coming up next, and I realized, oh, do I exclude them from domestic chores that their sister did just because they're a boy? And I realized, well, no. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they're going to be husbands someday. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to put on them the expectation that their wife's going to do certain things just because, you know, I did it that way.
Yeah.
And that was a light bulb. It was a big light bulb moment for me. And I think as Christians, it's really, really important that we can really see that we're not just raising many, or, you know, mm-hmm. many me's. Mm-hmm. We aren't raising kids so that it feels good for us. We're truly raising Christian leaders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was one of my biggest, I guess, missions. Was that whoever my children were, once they left my home, wherever they worked, they would be a leader, and a leader that reflected Christ.
Yeah.
And I think in today's culture, that's even more important, that we raise, you know, we're raising the next generation of Christ followers who mirror the image of Jesus.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's been one of my wife's favorite sayings recently, when the boys are pushing back against whatever domestic chore that we are trying to teach them or get them to be more involved in. My wife, and this is even down to probably even like, oh God, I'm going to embarrass them, but like even like hygiene things, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever the case it is. She's just like, I refuse. To harm your future wife. like I am not going to do this to them. We will make sure this happens. And that's because ultimately, I mean, this is their thing. Our children are not they don't actually belong mm-hmm. to us. They are on lend. God has, you know, mm-hmm. and I've thought about this, Andy, so many times over, you know, over my years of ministry, doing when we do our child dedications, mm-hmm. right? And parents, this beautiful thing, when parents come before a congregation, and the congregation says, we will invest in you this way, and you're making these commitments to raise this child in a Christian home and to do this, all those sort of things. And we say those things, and we make claims about that they ultimately belong to God. And we kind of try to mean that, mm-hmm. but I don't know if we really do at that stage. Right.
No, I agree 100%, because when my, I mean, When my daughter, who's our oldest, was looking at colleges, she was accepted at a university in Virginia, you know, several hours away. Mm-hmm. And she was accepted at one down near Indy. And I was just thinking, well, duh, she needs to hurry up and choose one in Indy. Yeah. And God like struck me with lightning. Not really, but it was, I was dusting. And it was this moment where he said, Brenda, I'm calling her farther away. Mm-hmm. This is just a stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And if you don't back off,
there we go.
Then you're going to mess with her life. Mm-hmm. Like, guess what? I have a relationship with her that you don't know about. And it was this big eye-opening moment when, oh, this is really, I guess, what we are supposed to pray for, right? That our children truly follow Jesus, even if that takes them to a different country. Mm-hmm. Or if it takes them across the country. I've got one now who lives 13 hours the other direction.
Yeah.
At least they're within the borders. So, but I think we really do. We can kind of get into almost like idolizing family within the Christian community.
Yeah, there we go.
To the point that parenting becomes an idol. Our children become an idol. And as one whose children have all fledged out of the area, they live like 1, 2, 4 hours and 13 hours away currently. But they're all following Jesus.
Yeah.
And I have to tell myself when I can look at other people and be envious because their children are like, you know, 15 minutes down the road or even half an hour down the road. But realizing, no, this is what it is about. It's really not about my comfort. It really is about raising disciples who then start living out their faith in the places where God has called them.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fear? You talk about idols. What is so scary for us about our kids leaving and fledging? Is it the sense of, maybe it can vary and there's levels for each individual, but like, I just know that feeling I have in the pit of my stomach, maybe on my worst day of trying to think about them leaving.
I think for me, sometimes it's like that. Well, you know, did I let them not fail enough, but like, did I let them do their own thing? Did I let them do this? Are they so dependent on me for every little thing, or, you know, of that, like, are they going to be able to do it? Like, that just worries me. Yeah. Like, okay, are my, especially my boys, like, you know, those two, like, are they going to be able to get out and live and do their own thing and actually survive? Like, I think for me, that's what it is. But yeah, what would you say, Brenda?
I think it's identity. I think especially as Christian parents, there's this identity that is wrapped around being a parent. And we kind of know what that looks like. And really, when our children leave, it's like part of our identity has gone. Because who are we when our kids aren't within our reach? And I also think part of that identity piece is this thing of reciprocity. Like, we kind of know what we're doing when we're parenting. Like, even if we don't know what we're doing, our hands are on our kids. And there's a natural reciprocity of giving out love. Like, this is our purpose, right? We bring home that baby and it's our purpose. And all of a sudden, then our purpose walks out the door. And there are all these books about, you know, find your purpose as an empty nester. You know, what are you going to do next? Well, I think that's part of it, is maintaining an identity. And I think for moms especially, I can't speak, you know, to you guys as dad, but I know for moms, when our identity, even if we work outside of the home, but our identity is wrapped up in our kids, it becomes so crippling in some ways. It's like a ripping away. And I think often as Christians, we could do a better job of centering our identity as a man or woman who's following Jesus, and raising children is what it looks like, walking it out. But I think our culture kind of wraps up again the family as an kind of like as an idol. And then the other piece too is kind of about performance. It's kind of like, I'm a good dad or, you know, bad dad, depending on how my kids launch or if they're following Jesus right away, or as long as they're doing the right things, then I've done a good job.
Yeah. I know plenty of people who have done all the right things and have not had kids launch well. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say like they were, everything would say that they tried to be obedient to God in the process, mm-hmm. and they're in the results, at least in the initial years, their kids did not fly that course. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I also know parents who were emotionally removed unavailable in various ways, or were like super helicopter parents or lawnmower parents or whatever we want to call. And it seemed like from a distance, like they are just setting this kid up to fail in every single way. And the young person will go and we'll maybe they just said, listen, I just know all the things not to do. And so I'm just going to go and live my life that way. And then, you know, and they sought success that way. I am not so sure. There are, I think, good, tell me, and I push back on this, but I think there are good and wise things to do. I think we are guided through the scriptures. I think as parents, as followers of Jesus, how we are to live, how we are to raise our children. It's not a magical formula. Mm-hmm. There are actual no guarantees in any of that, because mm-hmm. there are other variables outside of us. How dare I say it, but there are, right? To your point on identity, unless our identity is actually rooted in something other than that performance, and we are easily set up for a real roller coaster ride. And I don't even need to, I mean, I can say that for myself, but I don't even need to look too much farther than, you know, plenty of travel baseball games that I've been to where this dad that I am hearing at 95 decibels over here, he's not yelling at his kid because his kid didn't run out a pop fly. That's not why he's yelling at him. Mm-hmm. Right. And I look to that. And this is probably even the hallmark of this show is trying to call, yes, you know, our dudes and dads, ourselves, and families back to this idea so often, that we first, you know, like the measuring stick that is against us, or that we're the things that we are being called to, and what really is true success doesn't look like, in general, what our society mm-hmm. says it does, what cultural values says it does. I was listening to my nephew, Evan, who was hanging out with, so Evan just graduated. He just graduated high school this last year. So he just turned 19, and, I'm listening to have a conversation with my brother, over the phone. And, you know, he says, he's like, dad, I don't care about making money, but I want to have these experiences. Like, I want to go and do something, you know, meaningful. And this is fresh in my mind, because this literally was going on just before I came to the studio here. And, you know, and I thought to myself, like, you know, here he is as a young person. He's not measuring himself. Like, success is not about the dollar mm-hmm. for him, ultimate mm-hmm. dollar for him. His father did wisely say, Evan, great. It does cost a lot of money to live. So we just need to figure that piece out. We need to figure that piece out. But I think, you know, I just think of like, what are we instilling value wise? Because so many of our kids' values and expectations are caught. They just catch it from us, whether or not we've ever sat down with them. Andy, I think of so many of the things like that our children have learned from us, not because we sat across the table from them and
good
said,
or bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Good or bad. And said, these are the official values of the Lehman DeMont households mm-hmm. and whatever, but they see it mm-hmm. in us. And so it seems like if that's the case, then a certain level of strategy is necessary. Mm-hmm. And Fledge in part, this book is full of strategy, mm-hmm. I guess you could say. And maybe some people shirk at that a little bit. Like and we don't mean it from like the CEO corporate, you know, we have sales strategies, marketing strategies. What is the Fledge strategy? And the big question, because you put pen to paper, you went down this list, which is, I mean, it's super helpful, y'all. And you'll get a link to this book, so you'll be able to like see it. But I mean, everything from I mean, gosh, you go through all what 22 chapters, and it's like just set boundaries beyond the picture perfect image, the family that prays together, take care of you, shut the door on your way out, cultivate your identity, accept midlife with grace. I mean, these kind of these sort of steps. So I hear strategy. I see strategy in this. What is that fledged strategy, if you're kind of to encapsulate?
Yeah, I think with any strategy, you need to know what your end game is. Mm-hmm. And fledge, the word itself, means two things. One, for a young bird to develop strong wing feathers that are ready for flight.
Yes.
And the second one is to put feathers on an arrow. And the book is written around Psalm 127, which is like arrows in the hands of the warrior, mm-hmm. are children born of one's youth, which means that bird is meant to fly. Like, that's the end game. Mm-hmm. And you guys are probably, I know you're probably sports dads and things like that, which means if your strategy to win a game is that you know what your end goal is to win the game. Mm-hmm. Or if you coach your players to know the different plays, to pivot, to try different things, but you try all these different strategies to get the end goal. And I think the number one strategy is that God has intended for our children to have strong wing feathers, mm-hmm. to be independent and autonomous. And that doesn't mean that they're out of the house at 18. They can be independent and autonomous and still live in our home. Mm-hmm. It's that God has created us as humans to be developmentally ready to step out into what he's calling them to be and do and to grow. And I just think as parents, so many times we think our 18-year-old is supposed to have the knowledge and have things figured out like a 40-year-old. Well, none of us did. All right. Yeah. We're still trying to figure it out too. I heard someone say that every parenting phase is new. Mm. Even for me, you know, like I'm truly an empty nester now because all of my kids now have their own homes, their own jobs, their own families. Everything is new. There's really going to be nothing that is even going to be the same for each of our kids. Mm-hmm. So I think the strategy really is thinking about not just that your kids can be, can stand on their own and have some resilience, but also what is your strategy for your child?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like mine truly was, and I have to remind myself of this, I truly wanted each of my kids to be a leader in whatever field they went into, to be a leader that represented Christ. And that meant that they had to figure out some of those things on their own. They had to, you know, I had two college athletes and they both had difficult experiences being college athletes, and there's no entitlement. I mean, that's just it. When they go to a job, when they go in those different places, they're not the big man on campus anymore. Yep. Like they were mm-hmm. in a, you know, high school.
Yeah.
So I think really just helping your kids, whatever it is your goal for them is it to be resilient? Is it to be, what is it to be? And of course we want all of our kids to follow Christ, but I also often tell parents like they have a lifetime to figure that out. And I think there's so many parents whose kids are not following Jesus as young adults or as adults in their 20s or even in their 30s. And they're distraught because my child's not following Jesus, but guess what? Like, they have a lifetime to choose Jesus, and we've got to keep that in our mind, mm-hmm. and know that God has a plan for them. And it's, guess what? It's not our plan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. I was speaking with a close friend, mom, whose kids are all, last one is about to graduate college and older, and a few of them are not walking with the Lord right now. And they come from a ministry background. And so, and I thought to myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, if all in all honesty, if they were in a local church right now, I just know how many people would be so scared for, like, mm-hmm. so worried for them. Right. That like, oh, you know, your kids are in this situation and here you are as someone who's been in the church all this time, like, oh, mm-hmm. there must be all this pressure and this concern or whatever. And I was deeply relieved, and I hope it's understood in the way I mean it. I was deeply relieved to hear this mom talk about, I have a desire for my children absolutely to be following mm-hmm. Jesus. They're kind of on the different spectrum points on this right mm-hmm. now, but we're going to continue to love them. Mm-hmm. We're going to continue to point them toward Jesus. We're going to continue to have these conversations with them. And the key is, by the way, they are still having the conversations, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And I think you know, we said, as I said earlier, like, we are raising adults we want to hang out with, you know, later in life. I mean, that's ultimately what we're going to be doing. I just hope that when they come to that fork in the road, that I'm like, I want to be one of the first ones they call, even if they're 30 years old, like, that we're still at that place. And it seems to me like the fledging process, even when it's years prior, is still leading in that direction. Mm-hmm. It's still keeping the door open for that, which seems like, I think we could talk about strategy in that way. Like, do I have the kind of strategy that my kid wants to call me at 30 years old and have that conversation with me?
Yeah, I talk about two different things in Fledge. And one of them is that it's relationship parenting versus performance parenting.
There we go.
And that's, you know, 25, I recently heard a statistic being 30%, but 25 to 30% of all adult children currently are estranged from their parents. Wow. And they're choosing that.
That's wild.
And it's happening within the church too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, parents are saying, well, what did I do wrong and all these other things? And it's really about the relationship. Mm. Now that's a whole nother, that could be a whole nother topic.
Yeah.
But, it's this idea of keeping a relationship open with your child. Mm-hmm. And then also regarding the faith question is that, I kind of share the image of our goal as parents when they're in our home is to posture their hearts towards the Lord.
Yeah.
To posture it. Mm-hmm. We can't guarantee they're going to walk through that door and when it's going to happen. But if we can have an open relationship with them, and if we can not be afraid of their questions, yeah. I think especially in today's culture, there's so much around faith right now, especially for Gen Z, that for any parent who has a Gen Z student, really being curious, like if I could give one tip, that would be it. Be curious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't try to fix it, but be curious, learn to ask questions. And, you know, I often think of the image of Abraham and Isaac and, you know, the Lord's goal, the end goal and the strategy was what? Well, the strategy was take everything with you except for the lamb. Like he asked him to sacrifice his only son that he had waited for. And till the end, till he had the knife up and he was ready to slay him. What did he say? God will provide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's also our posturing to the Lord too, during this season, during the whole, really as our kids are adults also.
Yeah.
So we talking about the launching of our kids. And then I think we would be especially when we have, again, a professional counselor in our midst. I definitely don't want to miss the conversation of how our youth are doing in general right now, because this is part of the parenting journey. I think for so many of our parents right now, we have such an anxious generation of kids. I've been absolutely addicted to Jonathan Haidt's work on this and what, and really one of the big takeaways is, individual families have a very hard time making a dent in what we're seeing here. But if communities link arms together, if we all can come together, and this is where I'm pushing on the church very heavy, because I'm like, I think we are so well poised to speak to this challenge that we see of our anxious kids. That I just want to, like, I want to scream from the rooftops. Like, can we all start talking about this as a recovering youth pastor? Like I just do feel like we are always the last ones to the table on the conversations on this stuff. And I think we should be the first, right? So I'm willing to bet that you and I share similar frustrations in this area, right? Within our beloved Christian communities. Like let's talk about it. When you think about young people right now and the young people that you interact with and you see in the conversations you inevitably have with parents, kind of under this banner of anxiousness, what do we say to a parent who notices or has a concern? And this is, I think, it's a normal parenting concern. Like Andy said earlier, my children are going to go out into the world. They are going to feel the weight and pressure of responsibility. Regular old, good old fashioned responsibility. I have to get up in the morning. I have to go do X, Y, Z. I have to be able to provide for myself. And I have to have the emotional, spiritual wherewithal to do that. Not just once, but several times.
Every day
until you die. And some of our parents are going, I am worried that my kid isn't there. Mm-hmm. What's your conversation with them?
My conversation, number one, is a visual picture. The first, which is your child is driving off into their life, whatever that looks like. And they look back in the rearview mirror and there's mom or dad on the porch. And what do they need at that moment? Do they need mom and dad cheering them on, saying, you got this, like you got this, even if mom, like poker face, right? Mom doesn't believe it, but she's like, you've got this. Or do they look back and mom and dad are bawling and wringing their hands with that, that insecurity on their face, because it's very similar to the reflex that a baby has, right? When a baby has that startle reflex, when they're just a few months old, right? They think they're going to fall when they're on a safe plane and they look to mom and dad's face and they're going to respond to our face. Well, our kids still are looking at our faces. And when they see a face and mom and dad are like, you know nothing and you cannot do this, then is that going to give that child confidence, or is it going to exacerbate anxiety? It's going to exacerbate anxiety. They need to know, and this is, I think, my big thing, especially to Christian parents, is child development has not changed. I'm sorry, other things change. Guess what? God created us as humans. We haven't changed.
Yeah.
It's been our expectations. It's what we've done. And to be honest with you, as a professional who's worked in public schools, the kids who don't have resources usually are better able to manage on their own. Why? Because they've been getting themselves up since they were five years old.
Yeah.
They learn how to cook for themselves and their family because mom and dad are both out working, or they're, I think that we as Christian parents need to trust the Lord a little bit more. And I'll never forget a conversation I had with one of my sons when I was writing my second book, Uncomplicated, because our kids were raised on a farm and he was in college at the time. He was a college athlete. And I was like, so what do you think? What benefits have you learned about being raised on a farm? And he's like, Mom, most of my peers don't know how to do life. Like, they just don't know how to do life. And to hear that from him and to say, like, I'm glad you made us do different things. I'm glad we had to learn these basic life skills, because that's what's missing. And for the first time ever, Gen Z is now they are less intelligent than their parents. This is the first time in human history. And with AI coming up, like, this is, if I could shout from the rooftops and say, we have got to fight for our kids to be the image bearers as humans that God has created them to be, especially in the culture that they're going into. We need more than anything to back off and let them figure it out. God's created them as problem solving creatures, and we need to strengthen that rather than rob them of that. And I talk about don't steal the struggle in Fledge.
There we go.
And because when we steal the struggle, we actually rob them of God's design and what God wants them to learn in their life. And like, I want my kid to know what to do when I'm not around, because life will be harsh, but I want them to know how to figure that out, even if they fail. And one of my kids said one time, they said that taking risks is what helps them learn. Because every time you fail, again, strong wing feathers that are ready for flight, right? We need resistance in order to develop strong muscles. Like, that's just the physical principle about exercise science.
Yeah.
And so I think as Christian parents, we have a duty to equip our kids in the way God has designed them, not dependent upon the fears of our culture.
Well, and I think that's interesting too, because when we grew up, we were riding our bikes 100 miles and then across town and doing all this stuff.
If my mom would have known the places I was going.
But I think that it's made us stronger adults, whereas our kids don't have that. I mean, when they do go, we're watching them on Live 360, right? Like, we know exactly where they're at. And so,
I was talking about the other day. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Andy. Like, the last time that you saw a kid with skinned knees or God forbid, the occasional cast, I don't, you know, they fell out of a tree because mm-hmm. they were climbing it. They were out, you know, it feels like those things are less and less mm-hmm. the case, right? And it's super hard for a young person to believe that they are the kind of person that could go out into the world and face challenge mm-hmm. when everyone around them has said, listen, that challenge is dangerous. It is scary. Mm-hmm. And you need to, get down from there. Come down. Put your feet flat on the ground. And you know, we talk about bubble wrapping our kids and all mm-hmm. of that. I mean, those are the things. And by the way, it's our children, adolescent development, prefrontal cortex development, all of that has, roughly speaking, has been what it has been. Mm-hmm. We as parents, though, like this whole extended adolescence thing, mm-hmm. which I've again on this show before, have like really had lengthy conversations about that. I think of my grandfather who was mm-hmm. born in 1930, maybe mm-hmm. 1928, 1930. By the time he is 25 years old, he has inherited the family farm. Mm-hmm. He has three children. He is working the farm and another full-time job in a factory, right? At 25 years old. Mm-hmm. I want to see more 25-year-olds. Because it's like, if my 25-year-old grandfather could do that, I know our
right.
I know our 25-year-olds mm-hmm. can
right.
do that today.
Right.
That is, it is possible.
Right.
They will not explode. They will not wither under the pressure. And yet I struggle to find a 25-year-old mm-hmm. who I could put in that scenario and would come out on the other side of that. I always talk about my red cord story. The shorthand version of this is, it was in a professional situation. A young salesperson calls their boss in the morning, says, "My power has gone out. I am unable to come into work today." And the boss replies back, "What are you talking about? I don't have any lights. I'll get, it was like through a series of steps of like convincing them that they could indeed find a way to work. Call, okay, hang up. Call comes back a few minutes later. Because the power is out, I'm unable to get my car out of the garage. Older adult says to younger adult, "There's a red cord. Google it." Mm-hmm. Get your phone, Google it. Call comes back. "Well, I just called my dad, and he's coming to rescue me." And mind you that this individual had three other coworkers that lived only minutes away. There were like three or four other solutions that mm-hmm. were readily available to them. But at each slight challenge, each like slight thing that had to be overcome mm-hmm. there, in my mind, this young person, it was, "I don't have what is necessary mm-hmm. to overcome this." Mm-hmm. And I am concerned about that. We have a generation of red cord people mm-hmm. and I don't want that for them. And it's not entirely their fault because, by the way, dad did show up.
Right.
Dad showed up. Mm-hmm. Dad showed up and got the garage door open. Right. And what dad should have said is, "I believe in you.
Google it.
Google it."
Mm-hmm.
Pull the cord, you know,
or let me be yes. on, let me be on the phone right. and I will walk you through
right.
step by step.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, so, you know, I was
your
a latchkey kid.
Your parents barely even knew you
yeah,
were alive.
I know. Yeah, I mean, right. I bought the t-shirt that says "I've been adulting since elementary school." I did. I've got the sweatshirt. Yes. I wear yes. it very proudly.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. And I think that with AI, especially, like, it's a great tool, right? AI is our little assistant, but we really have to, teach our kids just how to be resourceful. You know, resourceful is creative problem solving in difficult situations. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the piece about working on the farm. That's the piece about, we didn't have Google Maps. Mm-hmm. Like, we had to figure out, our parents had to, you know, we had MapQuest maybe, but
you had to print it out and take
right,
it with you.
My mom reminded me the other day, back in the early 2000s, every once in a while I was driving, I'd have to call her and be like, "Is it a right or a left?"
Right.
At XYZ.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think even as your kids are seniors, you know, their junior and senior years are really great prep times to say, we're just going to have, you know, if you're talking about strategy, make a checklist even. Like, what are those basic skills that you want your kids to know? You know, whether it's doing the laundry, do they know how to call and make appointments? Mm-hmm. Do they know how to write their own resume without ChatGPT?
Oh, bless.
You know, bless you. You know, and really make that be their kind of basic life skill, because this is the thing, is that if, like, wanting to be a community, if your kid knows how to do these things, mm-hmm. then if they do go to college or when they are on the job site, not only are they going to rise at the top, but their peers will also then look to them as leaders. Mm-hmm. And I just really think that as parents, Christian parents, we just have to fight for how God has created us as image bearers and as human beings, because I think we're at a cultural shift. Mm. And in empowering our kids to be resourceful, to know what they can do. And this is the other thing, is that give your kids the opportunities to fail while they are at home, because that's when there's the safety net.
Yeah.
And if they can fail at home and know that, okay, what did they learn from that while mom and dad are still around them, then it makes them more confident to do that when they have crossed the graduation stage.
It's a lot of work. But it's worth it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I have a feeling, Brenda, you would say it's been worth it.
It has been worth it, because you talk about that 25-year-old. My 25-year-old he's married. He got married when he was a college athlete for 2 years. He's working 3 jobs. He's got 2 kids, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And, you know, one of his older siblings was like, what is he doing? And I was like, well, you know what? He's going to figure it out. Yep. And they're mm-hmm. figuring it out.
Yep.
And I think that, again, I want to be the person in the review mirror who's saying, you can do this. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've learned from working with kids, I think especially younger kids, because it follows the same principle which is, you know, when a kid comes to school and they're in kindergarten, they have to get out of the car. Mm-hmm. Like the first kindergarten drop off
Yes.
It's a disaster.
Yes.
But, but I've worked at schools where we've got 5th graders who will not get out of the car.
Yeah.
Mm. Nope. And it's kind of those images, like thinking about how do I want my kid to separate from me into their own life? And I think that's the other part of the strategy, is what is the outcome? It's their life. Mm. And we've got to set them up so that they have confidence in their basic abilities, in their own problem solving, to like, it's their life.
Yeah. Mm.
And it is worth it. Like, it's exhausting. Yeah. You don't lose your mind. You're exhausted. Like, all I want to do now is sleep. Like, just let me sleep. Let me sleep in a quiet house.
Yeah.
But it is a great, it is huge blessing to see your kids as adults. Mm-hmm. And I recently was blessed. Our son and daughter-in-law, and they have a 5'3" and a 5'4" and a 1-year-old. They're part of a group who just started a new church. Mm-hmm. And we were there on their opening day, and it was a pole barn that was standing room only, 150 people on Easter Sunday. And here was my son and his daughter-in-law. They were holding their kids, and I just started crying, because I had a privilege then to see into their life.
Yes. Yes.
And that's, it's worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, man, I think that says mm-hmm. it all. Right. And, yeah. And friends, I mean, for those of you that are listening right now and are like, My goodness, I'm not sure that we're even on the right page, or even in the right book on this parenting journey. You can do this. It might take some restructuring. You might need to get some trusted friends around mm-hmm. you. You might need, because by the way, the one thing, and we've been fortunate enough, we have 4 of our couples that have now been friends for, well,
ever,
two decades now, 20 years. We've all raised our kids together. Mm-hmm. Without me getting all weepy about it, I mean, they are the people that we go to first when we run into mm-hmm. a, oh crap, we're in a parenting struggle, or can you, pick so-and-so up, or, you know, whatever the case might be. The sense of community, like, you should not be parenting. You don't be parenting by yourself.
No.
This is a team sport, y'all. Get your people around you. You can do this. Reach out to some trusted people. Maybe you need, you know, it's okay. Maybe you need a family counselor. Maybe you just need to have a conversation with a great third party that can add some perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible. You can do it. We believe in you. And so does Brenda. Brenda believes in you. She really does. She is here in your corner. I can just tell, but yeah. Brenda, thanks so much for hanging out with us. Mm-hmm. We, however, cannot let anyone leave this show without.
Now it's time for Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
The Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
Here we go.
This is where we just ask lots of questions that have nothing to do with parenting, probably.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not. But maybe. They could. We'll see.
Joel, I actually brought the deck.
Did you bring the deck? Okay. So you've got your deck. I've got my questions. Good. At least I have a few. I'm going to start off with the studious one right away.
All right.
Because when we're talking with an author, we need to talk about books. So, all right. Brenda, for everyone listening, what book should we, as parents or followers of Jesus or whatever, what should we be reading right now?
Well, of course, Fledge, Launch Your Kids with Levels in Your Mind.
Yes.
Also, Uncomplicated, Simple Secrets for a Compelling Life, because it actually has a lot of the tools that we just talked about.
Perfect. Okay.
But also Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt.
Yes.
And I think Boundaries by Townsend and Cloud.
Yeah, they're great. And maybe someday she'll answer the book that Brenda and I will write together about discipling an anxious generation. How about we'll make our pitch after this. Herald Press, we hope you're listening. Okay. Go, Handy.
All right. Brag to me about one of the best things going on in the past 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
In my life, the sunshine today.
Yes.
Oh, that's it. I'm sorry. Yep. 70 degrees and sunny in April in Northern Indiana.
That's right. Yes. We're glad. We're so grateful for it. That's awesome. Let's see. Brenda, what is a vacation you haven't taken yet, but you are dying to take?
A vacation where I don't have to cook.
Oh, come on now.
And right. I just don't want to cook. No.
And where are you going, maybe?
And where am I going where I don't want to cook? I want to go to an all-inclusive, not Caribbean vacation. Like an all-inclusive... Ooh. Like a historic area in the United States, like maybe Pacific Northwest, all inclusive resort in the Pacific Northwest.
All right. We're going to, you know what, now that she said that, Jackie wanted me to come out to Portland with her this last trip. I was unable to do it because we had softball and I'm coaching. I'm sorry. And so now I need to find, because I'm hoping to return, get to that trip. So now we're going to find the all-inclusive Pacific Northwest. We're going to find it. Okay. Andy.
Who is your hero? Or no, sorry. Who is your favorite hero? It could be fiction or not.
Jane Addams.
All right.
Historical. See, by the way.
I'm sorry. I was a former history teacher.
Yeah, I was going to say.
These are like, these are not very good questions.
That is a strong answer, though. That's the quickest answer we've probably ever gotten on something like that. My final question is, you know what? We're going to do this one because it's interesting in your life stage. Of your whole family, who's the one that survives the longest in the coming zombie apocalypse?
Oh, my youngest.
Okay, tell me why.
Because he has such tenacity and he's also a distance runner.
Okay.
He's running a marathon next week.
And we do feel like to survive a zombie apocalypse that running will be necessary.
Right.
Some people have answered they've named their child and we've asked why. And they said, because they're the best shot in the household. It's like, okay, well, I guess that might be another skill in a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
As well.
I also just think he's like, he's read, like, he has read all of the books since he was like, I don't know, 4 or 5.
Gotcha.
I just feel like he's got the he's got the mind.
Yep.
Yep. To do that.
If he needs to form a new society in the zombie apocalypse, he will be the guy.
He will be the one. He's the one you want in your corner.
There we go. Okay.
All right. My last question. If you had to delete all but 3 apps on your phone, what would you keep? And. We're not talking like the messaging or the phone apps. We're talking about apps that you install. What 3 apps would you keep?
Amazon.
All right. That's fair. I would too.
AP News.
All right.
Okay.
And Instagram.
All right. Okay. Well, Brenda, I want to congratulate you on successfully passing the Dudes and Dads pop quiz. Way to go. Way to go. Way to go. Hey, friends, thanks for hanging out with us yet again. Despite our best efforts, you keep coming back. As always, you can head on over to dudesanddads.com. You're going to get all the information we can possibly put over there, ways to connect with Brenda, the books, the socials, all of that. So head on over there. You'll see that on the website. Andy, what else do we want to tell people?
Thanks for your support.
Yeah, thank you for your support.
If you're not supporting us, go to dudesanddads.com/support.
We would love to take whatever dollars you want to give this show. Guys, dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com. If you've got any great future show ideas, recommendations for guests, or harsh criticisms you want to send our way, we'll take it all. Feel free to send us an email. Guys, we want to thank you again and again and again for being part of this community. We love each and every one of you. We're grateful for you, and we wish you all the best. And until next time, we wish you
grace
and peace.